सागर की नील नहरों में, कभी ऊपर कभी नीचे, हुआ शीतल हुआ निर्मल, तुझे पाकर ये मेरा मन शरण में तेरी आए, शरण में तेरी आए, दया तेरी कृपा तेरी, शरण में तेरी आए, was it, but because I was found, yes, he is my clue. The end of my seeking, the beginning of my
This is very beautiful. Very touching. Can you hear me? I am coming to Delhi after 3 years. So I'll keep it short, and if you all want to share anything or ask anything after that, you're welcome to. There was a story which Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi used to say quite often, that one day Lord Subramanya, who is also known as Murugan or Kartikeya, walked past Lord Brahma. And he said, I have a big problem with your creation because it is so imperfect. There is hatred, ill will, spite, jealousy, ignorance, anger, pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame. What kind of a world have you created? It is a very messy job that you have done. And so he decided to tie up Brahma and lock him up. And he said, I will do a better job of the perfect world. So he locked Lord Brahma up. And as a result of that, the sun and the moon stopped in their place in the sky. The earth stopped rotating. Everything came to a standstill. And Subramanya said, now this is the perfect world. Now Shiva was walking past and he said, what has happened? He told Subramanya, what have you done? Why have you locked Brahma up? And he said, because Brahma made an imperfect world where people were at each other's throats all the time and were imperfect beings. So I had quite enough of this nonsense. And see, my world is a world of perfection. Because this world is the world of stillness. So Shiva told him, it may be so, but is this really a world now? You have created a void. You have created Shunya. This is not a world anymore. So Subramanya thought about it, that everything is absolutely still, nothing is happening, no night and day, no up and down, no left and right, no rich and poor, no health and disease. And so he realized his folly. And then he released Brahma and said, all right, you go about your business. Now when Ramana Maharshi would narrate this story, he would say that the jnani, the person of knowledge, is beyond the dualities of life. The imperfect world is a reflection of an imperfect mind. But the jnani, having no mind, does not see an imperfect world. You see, this is the sum of Advaita, which itself means not two. What happens is we lose sight of the polarity of daily living. If someone expresses a point of view which is different from ours, we get very upset. And we feel we are right. And so we take a position on the polarity. We are lost in the Maya, this imperfect world. The perfection is the source, absolute, still, void, shunya, nothing. But this is the realm of duality, of every conceivable kind. We lose sight of this and we get polarized. We, our own life has shown us that sometimes there is pleasure, sometimes there is pain. We can't control it. Financially, some years are good, some years are bad. This is the wheel of fortune, the wheel of karma. But the normal human being is escaping from the pain and trying to ensure pleasures throughout life, because the normal person is polarized. Just 2 days ago, I witnessed an argument which began with points of view and ended up with abuses. One was taking up the cause of Israel, and the other was taking up the cause of Iran. Both had their points of view, but both thought that their point of view is the truth and the only truth. You see, that is when conflict begins. We lose sight of the fact that everyone we meet is a conditioned being. They were brought up by a particular set of parents who had their own conditioning, in a particular religion, in a particular income group, and in a particular geographic location. And based on the conditioning they received since they were small, they developed a worldview, a point of view, a nature, just like the other person, whose set of conditioning was different. So who is right and who is wrong? If everyone has been conditioned by God, if the same consciousness functions through everyone, what argument are we trying to win? And then we get violent with the person, because violence does not only mean physical violence. To even harbor a negative thought towards someone is violence. So when we start accepting the people in our lives are made precisely the way the source has designed them, some I will get along, some I may not get along with. But when I accept that that same spark of the divine is within everyone, I don't lose my peace. When great sages like Ramana Maharshi, Shirdi Sai Baba have said the purpose of life is to realize the self, it sounds like a very lofty ideal, realizing the self. But what they are basically saying is there is only one source consciousness, the self with the capital S. When we stop looking at individuals in our lives as being the doers of their actions and hating them for their actions and what they say, and we see that the operating force is the same, then our relationship is no longer with people but with God. This is Advaita. You and me appear as two, but we are not. What binds us together is consciousness. The next time they come in front of you and you see them through the eyes of this teaching, that they can't help in themselves. Just like you have your own flaws, they have another set of flaws because it is an imperfect world. As Brahma himself said, that's why the world is there. It's a projection of the mind. So when we start accepting people the way they are without wanting them to change, and not only wanting them to change but telling them to change, and seeing that if they are not willing to change, then I start abusing them. These are degrees of violence. But when we accept that there are some people in life I will get along with, some people I may not, but I still bless them all. Because I have faced my challenges, you have your challenges. May God be with you through your journey of life. So I harbor no ill will and hatred towards anyone. How can consciousness hate itself? So realizing the self simply means no longer sticking labels on people's foreheads. This one is very dear to me, that one is not. This one I'll buy an expensive gift on their birthday, that one less expensive. This segmentation and compartmentalization is a human quality of the human mind. This is what disturbs one's peace of mind. Sukha Shanti. Who is near and who is far? In your own mind, the person who loves you the most appears, and in your own mind, the person who has troubled you the most appears. So both are equally close to you. That is the grand deception. What is the content of your mind right now? Is it living in the dead past of regrets, guilt, shame, and hatred? Or in an imaginary future which you hope and pray will be far better than your present moment? Not knowing when your last breath will be. So whether it is in the dead past or an imaginary future, what kind of a life are we living? We are no longer present to this divine force of consciousness, which is the self, the one self. And a quality of the self is peace. That is why Nisargadatta Maharaj said, realize people are very quiet. And they are quiet because their mind is quiet. Because their mind does not have the garbage which the ordinary mind has. The ordinary mind is a garbage can. Because if you could print out the reams of thoughts which take place in a day and you could read it all out, you'd be quite shocked at the contents. So for the jnani, there's no longer any polarization. There's no good and bad as such. Yes, decisions have to be taken. If someone is troubling the jnani, he will have to decide, do I stay, do I leave, what can I do about it? But he is no longer targeting an individual doing something. He is dealing with a situation. That is why when one of the cooks in Ramana Maharshi's ashram insisted on making a special meal for him, even though they all knew he didn't like being treated in a special way at all, he got angry. He got angry with her and she landed up with fever for 3 days. So a fellow devotee went to Bhagwan and said, you got angry with her and see what has happened. And he said, please tell her I didn't get angry with her, I got angry at her behavior. So the Jnani doesn't take things personally. We take things very personally. We get very offended and very easily. If you say something to a child, the child, because the conscious is not fully developed, is not even going to bother what you are telling him. But the adult who has understood the baggage and power of words takes offense. How dare you speak to me like that? Because the ego is so identified with the body that any threat to that identification it takes very seriously. Because the ego is afraid to die. If someone has an opinion which is diametrically opposite to yours, it means, and if you react violently, it means you are afraid to die to your opinion. Your opinion is so precious to you that you can't bear the fact that someone has a different point of view. And the spiritual journey is the journey of death, the death of the ego. What are you identified with, which you are afraid of losing? Because if you lose it, you will die. That is why the Buddhists say all fears come from the fear of death. The death of what? In deep sleep, you are not afraid to die. The child has no concept of death. You talk to the child about death, they won't even know what you are saying. And the child is pure being. Pure being is not afraid of death. But the me and my story, which is the ego, my drama, my story, that is the one afraid to die. And when this starts getting exposed by and by day in my life, that is the spiritual journey. Because the more that happens, the more am I at peace. The more silent my mind is, the more I am at peace. And then, when I have already died, before it is my time to physically die, I die a peaceful death. I die a peaceful death because I have lived a peaceful life. So these are qualities of the self. Silence, peace, equanimity, calm. Otherwise, it's quite a tiring life to be buffeted between the banks of pleasure and pain right till the last breath, to have relationship problems, to not get along with people all the time. It's quite a pathetic way to live. This is what human suffering is about. We are carrying a lot of dead weight behind us, especially by the time we are older, of what people did to us which they should not have. So we act like God, passing judgment on people. We think we are God. The Jnani knows that when he or she steps into a hall of mirrors, the reflection is the Jnani only. The reflection of the one self. But the individual who steps into the hall of mirrors doesn't see himself, sees different people. the one self is the multiplicity. It is not apart from it. You cannot find God apart from relationships. How can God not be in some people and be there in others? There are qualities of personality which you judge. But what is there apart from God? This realm of duality means relationships. In the singularity, there is no question of relationships because it is singular. Source consciousness is singular, but it has come into manifestation, and there are primarily three kinds of relationships. Your relationships with people in your life, your relationship with what happens in your life. That's also a relationship. How do I relate to the event which has happened in my life? And your relationship with yourself. And how is your attitude to these relationships determines your peace of mind? To realize that all relationships reflect my relationship with God. To realize that whatever happens in my life, I'm relating to it because it has happened due to the grace of God. And I say grace because when troubles and pains come away, that is grace, not when pleasures come away. Because it is through troubles and pains that we learn. We are in the school of life. We have incarnated here to learn lessons. And which lessons do we learn? It is the death of the thinking mind. This is the Mrityu Lok. Which other loka is this? It is called the loka of death. We are in the school of death to learn about death. The only certainty in life is death, and we are here to learn about it, not brush it under the carpet. And what happens when you're in a particular class and you learn your lessons well? You don't have to repeat the class. But because we don't learn our lessons well, we have to keep repeating and keep repeating and keep repeating and keep repeating. You see? Because we are mired in the illusion of two. And there's no other death but the death of the ego. And there are only two factors. A total acceptance of the will of God, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. And the entire pivot of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the ego deluded thinks I am the doer. The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. When you just accept this, that nobody is the doer of their actions, everyone is an instrument of God, operating on their genetics and conditioning and their innate nature, my battle is no longer with people. As the American mystic Joel Goldsmith says, then I lay my sword down. I lay my sword down, otherwise I'm battling in life. There are battles going on in my head every day. Is this life worth living like that? I'm angry with people, I'm angry with events in my life, and I'm angry with myself, I'm angry with God. Because I'm not getting what I want. This anger is the myth of power. Because I'm not getting what I want, I have the right to be angry. I'm an angry person now. People better do what I say the way I want them to behave. They must behave that way. So my life is an assault on people, on situations, because I feel there should be another way. The person who is interested in satsang, which is nothing but the company of truth, there is pure potential to get out of this wheel of karma, this senseless up and down, the wheel of time. The potential for deep peace is there now. Because otherwise, one is endlessly adding to the stockpile of karma, the mountain heap of Sanchit karma, and lifetime after lifetime one reincarnates. But on the spiritual journey, and when there's the grace of the Guru, then one is dealing with one's prarabdh, which is allocated in this lifetime, and is no longer adding through ignorance and ignorant behavior to the heap. That is the start of the spiritual journey. It's a very big blessing. So even if you feel you are not making progress, the fact that there is even an interest in a talk like this is a very big step. Because at a deep level, that feeling has arisen. I've had enough of this. I want to find out where my peace lies. That is why my guru would say, always consider your glass half full and not half empty, because even so far you have come, it is God who has brought you here. God appearing through situations and circumstances in your life has brought you here. That same power will not leave you here. Why feel that you will be abandoned if you have come thus far in the quest for truth? Who is going to abandon you? It was not in your control in the first place. So setbacks are blessings. For the me, it's very hard to stomach this. You might say, oh, my financial loss is a blessing. The loss of my relationship is a blessing. It is, because it is through pain that we learn. That is the way it has been designed. The problem is we don't learn. And then the same thing keeps happening again and again and again, and then suffering is compounded. That is why my teacher would say that life is imprisonment, because consciousness, which is so vast, is imprisoned in this frame of a body and the span of a lifetime. But what the human being does is converts what is simple imprisonment into rigorous imprisonment. By blaming, condemning, hating, judging, and so on and so forth. And the spiritual journey is the reversal of this process into simple imprisonment. So that the day you need to depart, you know you are free of this limitation and merging back into source consciousness. It is actually a moment of joy and celebration. But because it is the unknown, the ego is afraid to die. The ego is afraid of the unknown. It loves the known. That is why some people are addicted to suffering. If you ask a therapist this, there is also a term called the joy of suffering. Not that they are joyful about it, but it is known. It is the familiar. Now they know who they are. So the fear of the unknown is why we fear death. But the strange thing is we don't fear deep sleep. Deep sleep is our absence. We don't fear deep sleep. So we are naturally not fearing deep sleep. So why are we afraid of death, which is nothing but a long deep sleep? And the more we learn about this, the more we will live joyfully, happily. And when we are more at peace, those who we deal with will notice that and will probably get some of that. That is why Goldsmith would say, be a beacon of peace wherever you go, whether it is a restaurant, the airport, your work. Be a beacon and a benediction of peace wherever you go. There is a beautiful incident which I narrated in the Thiruvannamalai retreat when Annamalai Swami was put in charge of building the buildings of the ashram by Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi. And he was particularly proud of one building, and he said, the thought came to me that I've done a damn good job, and I could see the pride arising. And then he said, not only could I see the pride arising, I could see a dark cloud of the ego start forming above my head. That doership has come in. Me. I have done this. I have achieved this. When all along, Bhagwan had given him the plans for the entire ashram. And as he said, that each and every stone was guided by Bhagwan. But yet the ego is such that pride arises. I have done this work. And Ramana Maharshi came towards Annamalai Swami, and Annamalai Swami saw this dark cloud rise and dissipate. And then Bhagwan said, when the high priest comes, the dark spirits flee. Now, what is this dark spirits? He wasn't referring to ghosts. It is the darkness of the ego with its sense of doership. And the high priest represents truth, the light of truth. When that shines, then these qualities of the ego, the darkness of the ego, dissipates. That shining is the Sat. So whatever it may be that you are involved in spiritually, whether it is any form of yoga, whether it is bhakti yoga, kriya yoga, jnana yoga, if you stay close to it, this darkness of the ego starts dissipating. But close to it does not just mean reading the scriptures once a week in a group, or you know, having just a set time. Being close to Sat means it's in your mind all the time. Anything happens in your life, you think about it. That is the reset. That is called living the teachings. And that is why some of you who may be there tomorrow at a talk which we are giving on Sai Baba's teachings, we did an entire series of living the teachings of Sai Baba. Because mere reading is not enough. But applying it to daily life, to situations, that is the sadhana. That is called Gyan Tapas. Gyan Tapas does not mean I have to sit in a cave in order to get into Nirvikalp Samadhi. Gyan Tapas means the fire of knowledge, the knowledge of not to, the knowledge which transcends the illusion, the appearance of Maya, that knowledge, shattering that through the eye of singularity, the eye of Shiva, not the eyes of duality. Physical eyes will see two. The third eye will see one. That is Jnana Tapas. That is what Jesus told Pontius Pilate, that you think you have passed the judgment that I'll be crucified, but thou could have no power over me except if it was given to thee from above. Jesus knew that Pilate was the instrument through whom it would be announced that he is to be crucified. But he also knew this could only happen if it was the will of God. That is the eye of Shiva. So what happens is, living the teachings means that this center starts opening up more and more, more and more, more and more. And the only measure to know whether it is opening up is by the degree of peace you feel in your life. So it doesn't need you to be in a cave, but at the same time, it's not easy because we are very selective beings. When we want to be rude, we'll be rude. Especially if that person is less powerful than us. It happens in an office environment. If a senior shouts at a mid-level executive, the mid-level executive will take out his frustration on those below him. Because it's all about domination and control. We all do it. Let's be honest. We go after the meek because they don't hit back at us. And we are scared to go and give back to the powerful because we know the repercussions. We are all guilty of this. So the fire of knowledge will burn the house of polarities down. Make no mistake, it's not easy, but it makes life simple. That is the guarantee. Because the third eye is the eye of awareness. Not knee-jerk reactions which happen throughout life. Someone just touches me and I react, pushes my button and I react. All my life will go like that. But when this eye of awareness opens, the opportunity is there to break that pattern of reactivity and convert it to a response. Then, if I'm battling someone, playing a tennis match with someone, and I put the racket down in the middle of the game is over. This obsessive need to react drops away. That is the eye of singularity. Because our reactions are based on past conditioning. All our lives we are living in the past. What happened to us in the past. And so we find life marches on. We are 50 years old, 60 years old, 70 years old. And we realize now there's less time. But what we don't realize is that we have largely lived a past life. Because we've been living in the past. So even this life is gone. When the divine force comes to take you on your last day, you just have to tell that force, I lived a wonderful past life because I was living in the past all the time. You see how absurd it is? That is what happens. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything?
Om Sai Ram Gautam. It's my great fortune to be in today's Sangha. My question is, you spoke about ego deludes, thinks that I'm a doer. And you also spoke about the aspect of karma. Baba also talks in the Satcharita, and we paraphrasing it, that you are not the doer, and not even a leaf is turned unless not his grace is there. Also in the chapters ahead, he also tells a devotee, if I remember it correctly, he was imprisoned, and he tells Baba that, if you are there, my guru is there, why should I have to go through something like this? And Baba says that, it's your karma, and the guru also cannot interfere in your karma. So I'm often confused between this dichotomy of karma and the sense of doership. If you could throw some light on that, because in one way we are saying that you're not the doer, but the aspect of karma, you are what you are because of your thoughts, words, and action.
Yes.
So I'm a little confused here.
So this is exactly what I speak about at the satsangs at home, that one incident where Arjuna puts his bow and arrow down and tells Lord Krishna that, boss, I can do anything you want, but I refuse to kill my preceptors. And Krishna tells Arjuna, you think you are killing them. You think you are the doer of your action. There lies your folly. You have been born of a Kshatriya. You've been trained all your life to fight. The situation is before you. You've chosen me as your guide. And I am telling you to pick up the bow and fight, but you think you are the doer. Whereas you are an instrument through whom the action must happen. Because I, Lord Krishna, as time, have already killed them. That is the main moment of the Gita, when Arjuna then picks up the bow and it begins. So this is what is doership. And doership means creating karma. Karma actually means action. Karma must be performed. This is the karma bhumi. But what happens, the ego takes it as my action. That becomes the mountain heap of karma. And so when Krishna says the ego deluded thinks I am the doer, he is referring to this point. That, oh Arjuna, you are not the doer of your actions. Actions have consequences. That is the law of karma. Actions have consequences. That my action is taking that burden personally and then it becomes my karma. It is so beautifully explained. That is why my spiritual guide Ramishti would say, in this life, to put it simply, we have to act as if we are the doers, knowing that we are not. Knowing that God is the primary doer. More importantly, when others do things to us, we must remember and realize they are not the doers. They are also performing their actions based on their blueprint, their karmic blueprint. So we no longer take things personally. The sage rests in the impersonal awareness of pure being, in neutrality. That is where the difference lies. It's obvious, you know, if you have one person in your life who really bugs you, and one day that person comes, maybe tomorrow, and stands in front of you and does the same thing, and you just look at that person and say, my God, how helpless this person is. They don't really mean to say this. They're just operating on a script based on whatever suffering they faced in their childhood. You'll be surprised to find that perhaps compassion will arise for that person. Earlier, you were attacking, defending, and all those modes of the ego were falling into place. But now you just look at this person and you will feel such compassion, which the Buddha talks about. The felt oneness of being, that if I was in this person's shoes, I would say the same things. Luckily, I'm not. But if I was treated the way this person was treated as a child, conditioned the way this person was, what else would I say? So this is what changes my relationship with people. It doesn't mean I have to go and hug them and I still not get along. But I no longer take it as an affront on me. Because I'm not afraid anymore. I have seen through the Maya. When I have seen through the Maya, I don't perpetuate the karma. The Rinani Bandhan, which we've spoken about extensively, Nikhil and me at the interviews of Sai Baba, is the bondage of relationships. And that bondage is the bondage of doership. When that understanding comes, it is finished. The ring is over. Because I have freed that person from being the doer of their actions, no more lessons to learn. No more lessons to learn. Does that help answer your question?
Thank you so much.
You have to free people in your life. Because when you set them free, you set yourself free.
One is that the karma that you are doing, Sri Krishna says, ke, I am doing. These people are dead already. So you do what your dharma says, you are a kshatriya, you perform. That's one attitude of life. The other is, when I was thinking about it while you were talking, that if you see in the other person the same consciousness, if you really genuinely feel it in yourself, when you look at that person towards whom you had whatever degree of antagonism, that because in you there is that sensing and you communicate that vibration or whatever you call it to the person the person will change or circumstances will happen such that things will sort out or whatever. So I find these two are different, they're not?
They are absolutely the same. I'll give you one example. Whether the outer picture changes or not is irrelevant, firstly. It is your inner state of consciousness where the transformation is. And when my guru was in the body, there was an American millionaire who flew down on a private jet because he had a situation in his business. The situation was that he and his partner were on the verge of a split. And he wanted to save the split. But unfortunately, the chartered accountant was on the side of the partner. This was his situation. He came down for a meeting and he left. In a month's time, because I remember I was there, my guru received a huge amount of dakshina in his bank account, even by today's standards. So he was very eager to know what happened, what was the outcome of the meeting. So the call was organized and that man said, the company split.
Okay.
But he said, I went back with such peace in my mind and heart that my earlier thoughts of accusing my partner just dissolved. I accepted the will of God that it was meant to split, so it split, and that is why I have sent you the dakshina. Because you have freed me from this bondage of accusing him to be the reason for the split and disturbing my peace of mind. I have accepted the will of God and you have freed me. I'm done. I'm out. That is what happens.
How do you merge the two?
It's the same thing. Krishna removed the burden from Arjuna and freed him of that burden of wanting to kill others because he said, you are not killing them, I am killing them. So he was freed of the realm. Same thing. It's all within our own consciousness.
Yeah. You're one of the fewest, not the only person. I accidentally stumbled upon you on YouTube. Your guru was suggested by one satsang I used to go to. And then YouTube, I was searching for this thing and there was pointers by, you know. So I said, well, what? And what I used to ask in various satsangs I've been to, he would give us so much of jnana by so many people. It's so scripted, like, you know, now you tell us, like, in actual day-to-day, what should we do? You know, that's
day-to-day ka hi baat kar raha hu.
That's why I'm after your life.
Please do after my life. I'm happy because I only talk of
you. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That the only person who comes to this is, okay, now here is this situation. So, I think perhaps oldest or amongst the oldest here. So, you're, of course.
What is among the oldest?
That's sweet of you to say that. So, a lot of issues that from when I hear your podcast, when I kind of mix match and see, achha, should I have done that or should my attitude, even today, what is continuing, should it be looked at it from how you are explaining it? So, today it was just like, Shri Krishna ka this thing we talk of so often, and at that time it is thrills one. But actually, when you find that person is like how the gender is a millionaire, that the partner was taking away the whatever.
Yeah, me and my hard-earned money, mine, how dare you take it away? You see, that is the issue.
So, I'm going to not think about that and talk to you tomorrow.
And you know the three bad words in this teaching, could, would, and should. You're always living that, could have been that, but we should have done that. And what if that would have been, could have been, should have been? And the whole life will go and go and go should.
Yeah, for me it's like, what happened?
That will be your mantra, your japa is could, would, should. Could, would, should. Could, would, should. Could, would, should.
As of now.
The life goes like that, all of us.
Yeah.
This is the mantras. Mantras of daily living. We are living that. The die will be done is a mantra. This too shall pass is a mantra. These are mantras. These are mantras of Jnana Yoga because japa is not for everyone. This is the japa. If this goes into the consciousness deep, and you know, even people like, I'm using not the word people, great beings like Sai Baba, I think if I can imagine him banging his head against the wall with this sangha, because he was a grand master of deception. Everything he did had a deeper meaning, but people just looked at it at face value. Even today I get mails saying, what kind of a master was Sai Baba? He took money from people. When he takes 2 paisa of Shraddha and Sabri, or paisa do asme, kya aadmi hai? These kind of mails come. Because people don't want to do Gyan Tapas. And they want more things. You know, Ramana Maharshi said it himself, that people come and do Seva here thinking they'll get self-realization, and in 30 days it doesn't happen with me. That also happens. You see, we are very selfish beings that way. So, theek hai, we keep trying. But that effort, Maharaj said, earnestness is the key. At least the effort is there. That is all that matters. Out of time. Maybe one more question. Then we'll some tea and coffee, right?
Okay. Sir, thank you for everything. So a little away from the day-to-day life. There's no sense of doership. There is salvation. Yes or no? Is it also prescripted?
Everything is prescripted. Like Ramana Maharshi said, to go back to that incident, the buildings of the ashram have already been built. Dayanand Saraswati put it in another way. When he was asked about free will, he said, if there's a goat which is tied to a rope, and that rope is tied to a peg on the ground, the goat can only roam to the maximum length of the rope in that arc. But within that space, he is free to roam. So that length of that rope is prescripted. But our attitude to life, that is what my teacher would also say, that attitude to life is where peace lies. Not in what happens in life, but our attitude to it. And our attitude to it means our attitude to the other, whoever the other may be. Your ashram is your household and your friends. I come from a householder parampara. They were householder gurus who had kids. They were people of the world. And the saying is quite true that it's too easy to go and sit in a cave and not deal with people. The real sadhana is done with people. That is it. So to be very aware and conscious. That's why Eckhart Tolle has a beautiful saying that relationships are not meant to make you happy. They are meant to make you conscious. You see? So this fire of knowledge, this light of awareness, the quest that may that burn brighter and brighter and brighter as each day passes by. That is the quest for truth. Sattva guna, the sat, to be tuned into sat, and not the masks which I'm wearing, different masks with different friends, different masks with family, with strangers, a different mask. These words come from Latin, mask, masquerading, we are masquerading. We are putting on a show because we want to be loved. And in satsang, the opportunity is to put that mask down and let the light of truth, the light of being shine through. You see? It's time to put that mask down. Nobody is interested in your grand deception anymore. When you're on the spiritual journey, It doesn't matter. That's why people on the spiritual path find that they start losing their friends, their social circle, because they lost interest in the mundane, you see. They no longer identify with it. It's scary because the norm is falling away. But it is a great thing. So we question everything. You know, I'll end on this note, which is the American mystic Lester Levinson. He was fraught with physical disease till in his mid-40s. The doctor told him he has 2 weeks to live. And he was shocked. He had diseases of every conceivable kind. And he went back and he asked himself, what the hell am I doing wrong? And he got his own answer, that I was demanding love from everyone. But I realized my nature is to be loving. And he said, the minute I corrected this within myself, one by one, the diseases started evaporating. So, you see, I'd like to end on this note. If all there is consciousness, there is no other to hate. If there is no other to hate, it means there is no other. If there is no other, there is no me apart from the other. And if there is no me apart from the other, consciousness is all there is. If consciousness is all there is, the nature of consciousness is love. Because it is all there is. Consciousness doesn't need to do anything to be loving. Because the nature of consciousness is not to harm. Can consciousness harm itself? And consciousness cannot harm itself. Consciousness cannot love itself. But the nature of consciousness is love. So when this me and mine drops away, my entitlement to be loved by people because I feel I love them, that is my suffering. That is the cross. And that moksha is moksha from yourself. Moksha is moksha from you and me. There's no goal, there's no end goal called moksha. That moksha we taste is deep sleep, because when we all say deep sleep is so peaceful. I slept so well because you were absent. That's why you slept well. Your presence is the problem. This imposter waking state which troubles you is the problem. And moksha is moksha from this imposter which is not present in deep sleep. So you are the problem. But we have to realize that the ego doesn't like to be told that you think you have problems in life, but you are the source of all the problems. Alright. Thank you for coming and be well, be in peace. And as Gosu says, to repeat, be a benediction of peace wherever you go. Don't take your troubled minds all over the place, in the taxi, back home. Because like attracts like. A troubled mind will attract troubled minds. A peaceful mind will make other minds peaceful. That is the law. As within, so without. As above, so below. What you see is what you get. These are the laws of God. There are some books here, not written by you, but students who have been following these teachings for some years. They're very beautiful books. If you are moved to look at them in library, please do so. And I look forward to meeting some of you all tomorrow. I believe the group is closed because it's been overbooked. So next time maybe when Nikhil and me are giving a satsang in Delhi, we keep that in mind that people are receptive. We're not wasting our time over the years babbling away. You know, Siddhartha Mishwar Maharaj said, everyone is babbling in illusion. So, but the gurus are here to shake you out of the living dream of life. That is their job. In order to realize that oneself. So I will say, keep at it. The dream is bound to end someday. Thank you.